This is the RDU on Stage podcast. I'm Lauren Van Hamert, your host, and on this episode, I'm chatting with Mac and Judy McCord and Karen Topham. Hi, everyone. As we approach the end of Pride Month this year and the anniversary of the Stonewall riots, I wanted to create a space for an open conversation about transgenderism. 2 years ago, I met my colleague and friend Karen Topham, a Chicago theater critic, and over coffee one afternoon in New York, she opened up to me about her marriage, her family, and her journey being the first teacher in America to transition while still working in the public school system. I also love a good love story, and Mac and Judy McCord's story to me is beyond extraordinary and the true definition of couple goals. Mac was adopted and says he continued to buck against the whole being a girl thing until he was about 6 or 7 years old, which is about the time that both his parents suggested that if he didn't straighten up, they would institutionalize him. He came out to his parents as a gay woman when he was 28, but says it wasn't until years later that he began thinking about transgenderism. And that is where our conversation begins.
I found out I was adopted when I was 28, and I told my mother I was gay. And I was still female then. And I said, look, I'm gay. And she said, it's not my fault you're adopted, which I thought was the best line ever. You know, I was like, okay. Met Judy in 86. We were together for about 13, 14 years as a lesbian couple. And a couple of things happened. I had breast cancer in 96. And as a VA, disabled VA veteran, they hooked me up with a psychiatrist to talk to once a week. So a lot of shit came up that I had buried, absolutely buried. So I started exploring it for myself and thinking about it. And we, I decided to explore transgenderism and, you know, was that right for me? And, you know, I was told all kinds of things. I wasn't trans enough, whatever that means. You know, and people will tell you, you're not this enough, and you're not that enough, and you're not, you know, whatever. So I guess in 99, I started taking testosterone. I'd already had one breast removed because of cancer, and then I had the other one removed by a doctor I paid. And then went along, and then I guess so we moved down here.
06.
And I went to Colorado and had bottom surgery, so at that time, you had to have the full surgery to change your gender. I don't know. I guess it's state by state. But anyway, that's the way it was. So we moved down here and actually got married. And
it didn't take long for me to notice that there was more of this person that I loved available to me after he transitioned than there was before. I got the bonus, you know? It's just been extraordinary.
Somebody staying with you through a transition, no matter which way you're going, is not that common. Maybe it is more so now, but you know, back then in the 90s, late 90s, it was not terribly common. So I was, you know, I was afraid she was going to leave, and I wasn't sure exactly what I've gone ahead with transitioning. If she said she's going to leave, I don't know, you know? So I'm feel very grateful that she stayed.
Me too.
So, and by the way, it was because of the PFLAG too. I had joined a trans male group online. So I had people to talk to, and she was like, what? PFLAG has groups called SOFAs, mm-hmm. Significant Others, Friends and Family. You know, if someone is transitioning and they don't know what to do, they don't know what to ask, they don't know what to say, they don't know how to act, but they're willing to learn. That kind of helped us, and we went to events together, and it really kind of helped us sort stuff out.
Karen, your husband stayed with you through your transition, correct?
No, actually, no. I I was married young to a woman, mm-hmm. And I had three kids, but it was not like I didn't know. I've known since I was 3 years old. And when we met, I told her that I had these issues. But when I told her, I said it the way I believed it to be true, which is that I have these issues, but they're totally under control. I actually believed that, and I have absolutely no idea how I believed that they were totally under control when there wasn't a minute of any of my life that I wasn't thinking about them.
Yeah.
So I obviously had a very weird view of control. But we lasted 20 years, which isn't bad. I was devastated when I told her that I couldn't deal with life anymore and I was going to have to transition. And she popped the divorce word right into the very first conversation we had. And I went into that conversation sort of hoping that, you know, we could get through this because we weren't a very intimate couple and we were really best friends by that point. And I thought, well, what's it going to change really? But no, she was not interested in that. And she let me know right away that if I transitioned, she would divorce me. See, the thing is, when I went and I found a psychiatrist for the first time or a psychologist for the first time, I went in and I said, I'm transgender, but I am 40 years old. I'm a high school teacher. I'm married. I have three kids. I cannot transition. And this therapist said, okay, we'll work with that. And yeah, 4 months later came the time when I absolutely could not do any. I mean, it was basically transition or kill myself. And I counted the pills in the bathroom. But ultimately, I opted to transition. This was 1997 when I did that. And I actually I was going to transition in June of 99. That was my plan. But I couldn't last. I realized by December that, I mean, because I had started hormones in August. And I realized by December that there was absolutely no way I was going to make it 2 years. And I mean, there were already physical changes, but the most important thing, even if I could have dealt with the physical changes and hidden them and whatever, the most important thing, as far as I was concerned, was the emotional. There was no way I was going to be able to present as a man for another year and a half at that point. And I mean, and handle it emotionally. I just couldn't do it. You know, I've been doing it all my life, you know? I mean, I'm not exempt from the attempted suicide thing that, you know, 41% of trans people do, but I'm obviously still here. So I pretty much always chose that well, if it's one of these two things, I'm living and I'll deal with whatever the hard thing is. So I transitioned in 98. And I came back in the fall of 99 as me. Cool. And it was interesting because I was the first teacher in the United States to do that.
Wow.
And so there was all kinds of news coverage. Every talk show wanted me to be on. I refused. I regret not saying yes to Oprah, but I couldn't because I didn't want my picture out there because I had three little kids. The kids at school, the ones that knew me before, they were fine. Nobody had any problem with those kids. And some of the old male teachers had some problems, but they were on their way to retirement anyway, so I really wasn't worried. The principal really supported me. I was stunned. I had cultivated a good relationship with her over the years. I was really one of the only teachers who had a good relationship with her because they did not like her, but I did. I thought she was fine, a little cold, but fine. And so she really supported me. I was surprised and pleased with her support, and district supported me officially. I always have felt basically that they probably supported me because their lawyers told them they had to. You know, 15 years, I had tenure. So they would have had to come up with something in order to get rid of me and or fight me. And I don't, this is a community that the one thing they like less than anything else is scandal. So if they let me transition, it'd be like a 2-day story if they fought me.
Oh, yeah.
Go on for years. So I'm sure that figured into their thinking somewhere. But they were good. I was pleased. The community basically supported me. I got luckier than it was even possible to be, I thought. I have a really great relationship with all my kids. Everyone, though my ex had the custodial relationship with them because, you know, they were living in her house because it was a much bigger place than mine, but I had them a lot. I mean, they were over my house every weekend and during the middle of the week too. And by the time they were in high school, every single one of them opted to come to live with me. So we have a really good relationship. And I knew I wasn't going to lose my kids. I was sad about my ex and some friends that just vanished from the face of the earth, including my very best friends, who they just stopped seeing me. And that was sad and unfortunate. But my job, my career was still there. I ended up being in that school for a total of 33 years. And when I retired, you know, they put a big story in the newspaper, you know, and everything, because I was interesting.
I was lucky that I was able to transition while I was handling dogs. I was in the dog business. I mean, but dog people don't care. If you're good with dogs, they don't, you know. But what did surprise me, and like you said, Karen, you didn't do any public interviews. We did an interview kind of right after I came out. We were in Virginia, and the Harrisburg reporter, a lesbian reporter from the Harrisburg paper, whatever it was called, wanted to do an interview, and she came up, and she talked, and she was nice, but she didn't get it. And she kept saying, well, you were kind of a butch lesbian, and why would you transition? It was kind of a undercurrent of, well, I like you, but not really. You know, you shouldn't have done this for some reason. And we had lesbian friends at the time who just said, oh, you went over to the enemy. We're not, that's it. And just dropped us like hot rocks.
Really? The thing that surprised me was my lesbian friends, a lot of them said, you better watch out. You know, when he's a man, he's going to start beating you. Yeah. And,
you know, it's like all this tropes and stereotypes, it just comes up. And I think any group that's marginalized in any way can somehow not turn against, but wind up even obliquely marginalizing another group without realizing it. Mm-hmm. Even by saying things like, and we have friends, you know, in our theater community that we love them dearly and we're very friendly, but you know, they'll say, I just don't get transgender. Just don't get it. And it's like, well, you don't have to get it. But anyway, the article that was published was a lot more negativity, but very subtle negativity against what I had done. So People Magazine wanted to do an article, and I'm like, no, we're not going on People.
I want to talk about J.K. Rowling because she's once again has made some transphobic comments on Twitter and wrote this very long essay trying to explain herself. But when someone of her caliber marginalizes the trans community in the way that she has, what does that do to the community? Does it normalize transphobia? Does it make hate speech or that kind of thing more permissive?
People can take an interview and slant it very subtly. And I think that's what Rowling did and why she did it. I mean, maybe she was always this way. Maybe she had someone in her family. I don't know. I was surprised as hell when I read her post, like, wow. Because she was supposed to be all about diversity and inclusion and blah, 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 blah. And, but even her gay thing about Dumbledore, oh, by the way, he was gay, was never in the books. And if she really, really wanted to be inclusive, there would have been a lot of little Easter eggs in those books that people, older teens and that people had picked up on, and she wouldn't do it.
Mac and Judy, and I don't know, Karen, I mean, the bathroom bill here in the state of North Carolina made a lot of news because, you know, anytime we can make news, we will.
It's not good news usually, no. Unfortunately.
And I know, Mac, you and Judy, there was an article in the Charlotte Observer and you were talking about, Judy was talking about how she was very concerned about your safety. I know, Karen, you just talked about how you don't want your picture shown because you were worried about your kids at the time. Do you still feel threatened, particularly around this current administration, because he's been so hateful to pretty much everybody, but particularly the LGBTQ community?
Rowling is one thing. You know, Rowling has opinions. But to me, she's just a louder turf, you know.
Louder turf.
And I've had run-ins with turfs. I know that they're impossible to convince about anything, mm-hmm. and I'm like, okay, fine, you know, you do you, just leave me out of it. But Rowling's just that, and as that, she's. Because she has a loud voice, you know, she has some influence, but Trump is the president of the United States. And he has a lot more and dramatic, a lot more influence. He hates everybody and anybody that remotely crosses in is like the enemy of the state and, you know, whatever. But, you know, for a guy that stood up in his acceptance speech and, you know, said he was going to, you know, said that the LGBT community was, you know, going to be proud of him and whatever. Not that anybody believed that.
No.
But he's done everything within his power to erase us.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's another term, he'll succeed. If there's another term.
We're planning on running for a border if he gets elected.
I'm pretty sure that I'm out of here.
I don't even know how to be out of here. Anywhere we can go, we're gone.
That's my fear. It's kind of more of a generalized fear. Mm-hmm. I've never had any personal problems that have made me personally feel that I was in danger. And that's probably lucky. Again, I think I've been like extraordinarily lucky, well beyond anything that's realistic. Even like the very first time I actually dressed up and left my house, I almost transitioned before I had ever gone out in public dressed. It was like 3 months earlier, and I was going to visit my mom, and I asked her, you know, I said, look, Mom, when I'm there, would you mind? Because I've never been out in public, and I'm about to just, you know, change my entire life, and it would be nice to get a little practice. And she said, sure, fine. And she and my sister and I went to a mall in New Hampshire together, because everybody told me malls are like dangerous, that malls are scary because they're full of teenagers and teenagers are scary. And I'm like, okay. But I went to the mall and the kids were all there and there was absolutely no problem. And at one point my sister looked at me and said, did you notice that nobody's looking at you?
Yeah.
I said, that's wonderful, isn't it? So I've never really, I mean, from the very start, I've never had anything, and I'm pleased. I'm like, you know, cross my fingers. I'm hoping that that's the way it all just continues.
The only thing that has happened to me in terms of fearing for my safety is a couple of times at dog shows on the road or something, some yahoos will drive by or yell faggot or something because I'm small and I look like I'm kind of a wispy little guy. And then I'll bring the bloodhound out of the van and they go away. The bathroom bill was kind of a wake-up call because there, but I think trans men, it's not that we get a pass, but I think we fly under the radar a little easier than, we don't get the amount of hate that trans women do.
I think it's because honestly, and this is just what I really do believe. I think it's because the kind of people, the kind of guys that would be so like transphobic, mm-hmm. are the kind of guys that can't imagine anyone
yes.
who would rather be a woman than a man. This is like an affront mm-hmm. to their masculinity that somebody would actually mm-hmm. want not to be a man.
Yeah.
And they don't get it. None of them gets the whole mm-hmm. gender identity thing and, you know, the sense of self. Whenever anybody's asked me, you know, how do you know? And everybody asks, how do you know? My response to them is always, how do you know? How do you know that you're male? Or how do you know that you're male? And they're like, well, I just am. And I'm like,
duh. Ah. How do you know you're straight or gay? Or, well, duh. Yeah. Yeah. One thing that's been interesting when you're in a couple and you've transitioned is that our couple identity changed
very much.
Mm-hmm. It's like Judy was like, we're not lesbians anymore. You know? But so we were actually safer because people just glancing would assume, you know, a male, you know, a guy and a girl, which is kind of funny to us.
And so I have a joke that I'm an ex-lesbian, I'm ex-gay.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not. We totally still identify possible. With lesbians. It's like, yeah.
I say I'm ex-gay, but I'm queer as hell. My biggest problem with transphobia was with my son.
Oh, yeah.
When Mac transitioned, well, before Mac transitioned, my son had no problem having his mother attached to another woman. But when Mac transitioned, he didn't get it. He was afraid to have Mac be around his sons.
Yeah.
He didn't know how to explain it to them. So yeah. Mac was not allowed to come see his family with me mm-hmm. for 4 years. Mm-hmm. And for those 4 years, I had to choose. Do I have a holiday with my husband or do I have a holiday with my grandchildren? What's my choice? And that's mm-hmm. sucked big time.
I know what you mean. I have a sister who has 7 kids and mm-hmm. Most of them already had been born when I transitioned. Mm-hmm. And they thought of me as like their favorite uncle. That mm-hmm. I was the one that like they lit up when I came to see them and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And I played with them and whatever a lot. But when I transitioned, my sister was all freaked out. Mm-hmm. And she thought, I don't know, I guess she thought it was contagious or something. 7 years. She wouldn't
wow.
cut me off from my nieces and nephews for 7 years. And by then they had forgotten who I was. Yeah. They didn't know who I was.
Yeah.
When I finally got to see them again, it's like, okay, I don't have any relationship with these kids. Mm-hmm. And my father didn't accept me when I told my dad. We got into a huge shouting match in the parking lot in the rain. Oh, I remember he told me that I brought children into this world and I had an obligation to them to see them at least through school. My dad and my mom got divorced when I was 28. He said, I discovered when, you know, that I like, that I did not love your mother and I loved other women. I mean, it took me 10 years to get divorced because I had brought children into the world and by God, I was going to see them through high school. And I wanted to say, Dad, we knew you were having affairs all that time. Mm-hmm. You could do that when you're having, you know, when you've got that situation, you can't, what am I supposed to do?
Mm-hmm.
Be a woman part-time? My mother was wonderful. My mother was, you know, the Rock of Gibraltar. You know, she was amazing. I think I wouldn't have made it without her, but she was always right there. And she was also able to see the flaws in her ex-husband and a couple of her children, but she was always on my side from the start. And she died in 2015 and that was a that was a devastating blow. You know, I'm glad I had her. Mm-hmm. And two of my sisters have been on my side from the start. And my brothers have sort of been, you know, I have two brothers and they have sort of been on my side from the start. They sort of have supported me from the start and sort of not, you know. It's that male thing again. I don't know.
How are the family dynamics now in both your situations? Judy, you said Mac stepped into the role of stepfather. Did I hear
you? Yes. It took a long time for my son to actually get that this was my husband. He is Mac. He is he. And that's who he is. Yeah. And I think it was about maybe 10 years ago, he finally called Mac his stepfather, stepdad, I think it was. Yeah. And we both fell out of our chairs.
What?
Where did that come from? I don't remember that.
That
has continued. He actually, my son is very grateful that Mac and I have one another because he's not able to come see me very often. And he's very grateful that we support each other. The support that shows up unannounced and unasked for is such a joy.
Yeah.
It's such a joy to have people say, well, of course, that's who you are.
Yeah.
For me, that was a treat to know that it was okay to be who we are, period. End of statement. That's really cool, isn't it,
it's the
Karen?
Best thing. It's the best thing.
It is.
And it's why I couldn't last like the year and a half I needed to last before I was planning on transitioning, is because it felt too good to be me.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
For me, it was like almost instant. Like the first time I had a hormone shot, like, holy
crap,
that's what my brain is supposed to feel like.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah. I mean, it's like, this was, I mean, my brain was getting the wrong food all that time, and now it's getting the right food. I like it. You know, it's pretty wonderful to be seen as who you are when you've been hiding who you are for your whole life, and I think that's one of the key things.
I think that's why I got into puppets first of all, and you know, I was an only kid and played, you know, made up my own friends and dogs and cats, because you can kind of hide. You know, you are a person, but people see the puppet first, or they see the dog first. And so you kind of have a buffer that you don't feel you're actually exposing yourself so much.
Is it easier for younger people now transitioning, do you think, or coming to terms with their identity than it was 20 years ago?
I think definitely.
Oh yeah,
it's had a lot.
Many years ago, we were considered. You had to be categorized as being mentally ill to get help.
Yeah.
You know, you have to say, yes, I'm mentally ill. Please do this for me because I'll kill myself otherwise. And so now that, I mean, I get my tea through the veterans. I'm surprised Trump hasn't destroyed that yet, but he's trying to. They were on the cusp before he got elected. The VA was on the cusp of helping veterans transition physically, but that's gone now because of the Republicans. But
Biden is very aware of trans issues.
Yeah, if he's elected and we still have a country and whoever makes it through this pandemic, I hope it's going to be a more stable world.
Can we talk about the significance of the Supreme Court ruling? Does this mark a shift, do you think, in legislation?
Honestly, I think that John Roberts, and I don't like John Roberts, I don't like any of these guys, but honestly, I think that John Roberts, the one thing I will say for him, and it's been that way pretty much from the start, is that unlike any of the other Republican appointees, he actually cares about the Supreme Court as an institution.
Yes.
And I think that, you know, it's easy for any intelligent person to see how reactionary it is becoming. And I think he doesn't want that. He doesn't want that as his legacy. So in key situations like this, he will piss off the presidents and the Republicans by voting his conscience. A lot of times he just votes politically, but sometimes he can't go that far.
I think it had a lot to do with the fact that Roberts was in the room for the whole impeachment trial. And I think he was sickened by it. I really do, by the way the Republicans handled that. Yeah. And I think that was a shifting point for him.
You know, on the one hand, we have this legislation, which is really a win. And then on the other hand, we've had several transgender people that have been killed, found killed in the last month, just in the last couple of weeks.
It's been a bloody epidemic of it. I can't balance that.
I can't either.
More frequent than ever.
Well, and this year has been terrible. I mean, so far, I think what I saw was 15, and that may have even been before those last couple of weeks when we've seen several more. Is this part of what's trickling down from the top, from our administration, that there's a license to, I don't want to say license to kill, but a license.
Well, there
to
it is. It's open season.
Hillary said that the people who were, you know, that there was a certain percentage of Trump's supporters who were deplorable. And,
it was
absolutely clear that she was right. And it's even more clear now.
I saw on Twitter last night, and this kind of shocked me, but a gay white journalist had the nerve to say on Twitter that the Black and Brown community essentially have February as Black History Month, which, you know, that's a whole other podcast.
that is definitely a whole other podcast.
But that he felt that the Black and Brown uprising that we're seeing now is overshadowing Pride Month.
Go get my violin. You know, I think there are bigots in every group, whether they're gay males or gay females or whatever. White people, and I think, you know, at some point everybody has to get over their initial upbringing, whatever it was, if they were brought up to believe certain things, like, you know, well, those people, and as soon as you start saying things like those people, you're already creating that divide. It doesn't matter who those people are or what side they're on, okay? And yet, I think humans are basically tribal in nature, and at some point you have to learn to overcome the tribalism. There's nothing wrong with having your tribe of that believes certain thing and you do certain things together, that's fine. But when it starts to impinge on the rights of the other tribes and you think, well, we can't have a good life if those people are having a good life. And I think that's a thought, you know. Tribalism and division between nations is just abominable, and it's going to literally split the world to pieces. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are going to die who didn't need to. A lot of people are kind of wired that way and they're raised that way and they can't get over it. But if people are made to feel afraid, and I mean, Hitler did this, he made Germans, because they had been beaten so badly in World War I and had nothing left, and they were starving and they were afraid, and Hitler said, well, the Jews did this, and you know, you get a scapegoat, whatever it is. Those people did that, so you have to get rid of them because It'll happen again.
Fear is universal. Everybody fears. The trick is always, you know, learning that it's your fear. You know, it isn't an extrinsic thing. The things, most of the time, well, there's a monster out there, I suppose, okay. Yeah. But usually it isn't an extrinsic thing. Usually it's something that is inside of you. Mm-hmm. And it's an irrational thing because fear feeds on itself.
Exactly.
Fear does not need a reason to be engendered. And once it is engendered, it becomes bigger and greater and more powerful with no provocation whatsoever. Right. The trick to dealing with fear is always going to be to find the root causes of it and eliminate them. But people are, it's easier, it's a hell of a lot easier to blame somebody for it. And you know, the white people, mm-hmm. And we're all white in this podcast, mm-hmm. not that you guys can see us out there, but the thing is that a lot of white people, especially white men, who have been like ruling the roost for forever, you know, they're afraid. Going to change. And they see it changing all around them. And
change is scary.
Yeah. And they don't understand. They don't understand things like transgender. That's, I don't get it. And hearing what you don't understand mm-hmm. is like classic. So it's all about fear. Everything here is about fear.
I want to thank Mac and Judy McCord and Karen Topham for sharing their stories with me. I also want to thank you for listening. Of course, I'll put links to websites and resources in the episode notes. If you like what you've heard today, please consider subscribing to this podcast. Follow us on social media at RDU On Stage and visit us online at www.rduonstage.com. Until next time, I am seriously counting down the days until I can see you at the theater, and wish you a safe and healthy holiday week.